everybody. What is going on? It is Friday, August 25th, 2017. You're listening to WLXU 93.9 LPFM, Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from the north side of Lexington, Kentucky, up here on 6th Street on the north side in beautiful 100-plus-year-old Johnson Elementary, now known as the STEAM Academy. My name is Chuck.
I'm Jess.
And we'll be with you for the next 2 hours, bringing you some interviews with some interesting folks. And today, we're going to spotlight Jess.
Hi.
Hi, Jess. You know, so we're happy to have you, as a new co-host, new addition to the show. But I thought today would be great to get to know you a little bit better. And since you do so many things here in Lexington, I think it's a great opportunity to get to know and spotlight all the good work that you do.
Yeah, well, I'm honored to be on the other side.
Yeah, most
thanks
definitely.
For having me.
For sure. So, Jess, my first question for you is, where are you originally from?
I grew up in the northern part of the state, mm-hmm. in Edgewood. Which is right outside Covington, so, for people who are familiar. Yeah.
And KY.
Homeboy next to me.
Dixie Highway, brethren. Gosh. In the studio.
Yeah, really happy to be in Lexington.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah, it was a fine place to grow up, but mm-hmm. I definitely found my home, I feel, in more of a community here in Lexington mm-hmm. than I did back home.
Yeah, Northern Kentucky is quite an anomaly, and it becomes more and more so the further you explore the other parts of Kentucky.
Yeah, you know? It's really... it's a really odd place, I think, compared to the mm-hmm. rest of the state. And I'm thankful for, my time there, and a lot of people I love are still there. But I don't know if setting my roots here in Lexington seemed like a much better fit for me, mm-hmm. and something that I wasn't honestly preparing for. I thought I was going to be here for college, and then I'd, split out of the state altogether. And then I realized Lexington was different than Northern Kentucky, and was a place I could call home long term.
Mm-hmm. I feel you. I felt the same way. You know, I came here thinking I was just going to go to school, and Lexington has a way of trapping you.
It does.
It's like animal magnetism.
I know. Just puts its claws right in you and won't let you leave.
It is, but in the sweetest way.
Yes.
You know. So that's cool. So you went to school here at UK?
I did. So I graduated in 2004, or actually 2005, because I took about a year and a half. I went to DC, mm-hmm. And at that point in my life, I thought I was going to join the Foreign Service. Mm-hmm. So I was a part of the Embassy and Diplomatic Scholars Program through UK, mm-hmm. Which is a partnership through Georgetown, and I was really intrigued by former communism. Regimes and eras of Eastern Europe. And so I was able to get an internship at the Embassy of Croatia.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was there leading up shortly after September 11th. Mm-hmm. And I was there when we invaded Iraq for the first time. So, wow. Or not the first time, but the first time with George Bush mm-hmm. Jr. Mm-hmm. George H. Bush.
Yeah.
Or is it George W.? George W.
Herbert,
Bush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. George W. Bush, yeah.
So it was a really incredible time to be in D.C. And I thought I would stay there forever. I loved Washington, mm-hmm. and I loved being a part of a diplomatic community. I was actually... that summer, I was the assistant press attaché for the entire embassy.
Of Croatia,
yeah.
Wow.
Which was just by happenstance, but all the Croats wanted to go home. And my mentor and boss, Alan Vovidic, had said, do you care if you just hold the fort down for the summer?
Wow.
It's like, sure, why not?
Do you feel like you're still capable to speak on behalf of the entire nation of Croatia?
I really don't. Things have changed a lot since then. When I was there, their big push was, they really wanted to get into the EU. Mm. And so I think their objectives have changed a lot since then. Mm. But I loved working for them. The Croats were really wonderful people, and it was so much fun working in an embassy. Mm. We had a personal chef, that Ivo, who would make this huge spread on Fridays, and all anybody would do was just come to the kitchen and just eat for like 4 hours. And you could smoke at your desk.
Oh my gosh.
Which I liked back then.
Yeah.
And I had my own espresso machine and a gas mask. And it was, it was the American
embassy
dream.
Things. Yeah. Just the embassy, fun yeah. set. That's pretty amazing. So is the proper term for people from Croatia?
They refer to Croats is normally what they say. Croatians or, yeah.
Croats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like so
Krut Rock.
Yeah.
If you will.
They were they were really wonderful, gracious people. They taught me a lot and let me do a lot. I mean, I was really young. I had, like I said, aspirations for the Foreign Service, and was a journalism and anthropology student. So was just really thankful that they put so much on my plate. You know, it was a small embassy. Diplomatic relations hadn't been happening very long for the U.S. and Croatia. They were a part of the former Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were relations that happened later, and it was just a small group. And I was able to go to the Pentagon and legislative hearings when they interviewed my colleagues about ways to have a successful intervention, the Homeland Wars, mm-hmm. and U.S.'s intervention in former Yugoslavia mm-hmm. was really seen as successful. That was under President Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And so the folks that I worked for in the embassy were really called upon, you know, to ask what did we do right that we can implement again in Iraq. So it was just really fascinating to be a part of that conversation. Unfortunately, I don't think they took much advice from my former colleagues.
They lost their notes.
Yeah. They lost their notes somewhere along the way. But it was just really remarkable to be a part of that energy and that discussion and really see how important diplomacy is, how much language matters, you know, which I kind of hearken back to in the current administration.
Mm.
It was a very different time in Washington when I was there.
I believe it, yeah. And so what initially got you interested in diplomacy?
I think I'm a pacifist at heart and just by nature, and violence isn't something that, not to say that diplomacy is the opposite of war, but I was the conversation and communication and understanding people. And I realized as a student of anthropology, how it's really about understanding people.
Mm.
And I was coupling that with journalism in my mind, thinking if I wanted to write about people, I needed to have the best understanding that I possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
And anthropology was just like a new world to me. I didn't have that in high school.
Yeah.
I thought Indiana Jones was, you know, the epitome of the study of anthropology, mm-hmm. And archaeology. There was so much I didn't know about it. So when I came to UK, I just, I just felt like my world really expanded when I started thinking about people in a more holistic way, and I loved politics. I was always a political junkie. And at the time, UK did not have an international studies department.
Mm.
So international relations wasn't a track that I could take. So I was kind of doing this hybrid major, this individualized major where I was trying, like, journalism was essentially the policy, and then anthropology was the humanity, and I was trying to merge that.
Cool.
And so I had a Professor Michelle Rivkin-Fish, who was just instrumental in helping shape my views of the world. We lost her, not forever, but we lost her to Duke, which UK has a problem of retaining. They're really the most treasured professors, if you ask me, and they're not very good at that. But so we lost Dr. Rivkin-Fish for that. But she had done groundbreaking work in Russia and Eastern Europe. And so she just piqued my interest. And I was really interested in women in transition from communism to democracy.
Wow.
And kind of ended up in Croatia. And I got that internship, and it just... that's how it happened.
That's pretty fascinating, you know, especially the, you know, former Soviet bloc countries, just kind of their own identities. And especially, you know, if you look at what's happening in Ukraine and Crimea, you know, that's a whole nother modern take on.
Yeah, it really is. So, it was the most wondrous time, really, I feel like, in my life. And like I said, I always thought I would stay, but the world and the universe sends us in different directions.
That's very true. You're always where you're supposed to be.
Yeah. And my mom got sick when I was in D.C., and it kind of changed my mentality. I realized at that moment that if I couldn't get to her in a day, it was too far. And I completely shifted everything that I was doing.
Hmm.
And I had 6 awesome years after that with my mom. So I'm glad I came back to Lexington and was close enough to her to see her whenever I wanted to.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then I fell in love with Daniel, so that helped,
too. Hey, that helps as well. It's true. If, you know, if he hadn't moved back, you know, it would have been a very different trajectory, for
it
sure.
It would.
So here in Lexington, did you immediately start working at the Carnegie Center, or did you do some things before then?
So I used to work, if you remember, Nougat magazine, arts and culture publication. So I started off there. I was writing for them my senior year in college. I actually graduated and then found out that I was, even though I had like 140 plus hours, it was something crazy because I was a dual major. I was short a credit for journalism, one credit. So I got my anthropology degree, but not my journalism degree. So I ended up taking a rural journalism class with Al Cross, who is a gem of just journalistic knowledge in the state, and just has an incredible grasp and wealth of knowledge of the different niche and community papers that we have. So I was working for, or I was in his class, and we had like a project that we needed to do, and I decided to focus on the Nougat magazine at the time and started writing for them. And then after graduating, that was my job. So I was writing, managing writers, and then I was also selling advertising.
Cool.
And then I left there, which, you know, you always think the grass is greener on the other side, and I got this job at the Horse Park as the communications manager and editor for the magazine there, and it was benefits and it was paid vacation, and I just thought, like, this was it. Yeah. Like, this is my big break, you know, writing for this international horse magazine. Ended up working for a raging misogynist. I hope he's listening. And really terrible person. And I was in a super toxic environment. And I remember thinking, oh, this is just part of it. This is like what you do, you know, you, but, so I left a really great place at Nougat where I was really happy working with Mickey Wright. And John Van Meter and Soraya Brewer. And we just had this wonderful community there for, a job that was just awful.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And so I decided while I was there, I mean, I started looking for another job immediately, like I knew within months, but I have too much pride. So I was going to stick it out until I found another job. And I was trying to find something to supplement my lack of fulfillment. And so I went to the Carnegie Center to volunteer, and I started volunteering there with the former marketing director, who's now published author, Sarah Combs. Nice. And she was about to go on maternity leave. And so she really took me in and just said, this is, help me with, you know, whatever you have time to do. So I started off at the Carnegie Center volunteering, and then Sarah,
what were you doing while you were volunteering?
I was mostly working in marketing, so I was just trying to organize and consolidate the email list, and at that point there wasn't any events that the Carnegie Center had, so I hosted one of the first events, organized it, managed it. Which I always was on the mindset and still am, is in order to raise your profile, you really have to showcase events that are accessible and open in the community. So that's really been a big part of my focus the last several years, is having events and things that cause, you know, community reaction and chatter and interest. But yeah, so I was volunteering, so working on events and marketing. Sarah at that point was on maternity leave. And then I finally quit my job because Carnegie Center hired me part-time, and then Kelly Flood hired me part-time as her legislative aide. So I was working for Kelly Flood, and I was working for the Carnegie Center. And then about a year later, I got a full-time job, an offer from the Red Cross, and I came back to Carnegie, the former director at the time, and said, I really need a full-time job. Kelly had been reelected. I'm leaving, and they counter-offered, which felt really good.
Nice. They love me.
Finally. Yeah. But nonprofits move slow, and I know that, so I didn't take it as a slight. But that was 8 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
And here we are. Well, that's awesome. And, you know, I think the Carnegie Center is such an integral part of not only Lexington, but Kentucky's literary footprint. You know, it's really kind of the eye of the storm as far as all literary things happening in our state. It all kind of seems to land at the Carnegie Center.
It really does. You know, I often think of it as kind of this safe haven for writers. published writers, aspiring writers alike. But in recent years, I've really come to think of it as a place for just our community's voice, all voices, which is a charge in our mission, is, you know, providing a space for voices. And sometimes we don't, I think, make the connection of a voice translating on, you know, onto paper and, and into words and how important it is. So it's been, it's an incredible place to work. I mean, there's a reason there's no turnover there. It's a wonderful board, a wonderful boss. Neil Chethick has just been amazing at the Carnegie Center, and our shared mentor was Jan Eisenhower, and she really solidified what the Carnegie Center is academically, I think.
And it's amazing the vast group of people that the Carnegie Center serves. Everyone from, I mean, there's baby classes for babies up to, you know, senior writing classes.
There was one year when we were looking at the array of students that we served, and our youngest student on record was 6 weeks.
And what class was that for? Intro to Italian?
It was Click Clack Moo, and which is a great for any mothers, parents, guardians out there who are listening. It's just, you know, trying to introduce language as early as possible in kids. We're realizing more and more how important that pre-K education is. It's not funded publicly. It should be. That's just my opinion.
I'm right there with you.
And so it's a really great place for folks who want to bring kids to introduce language at an early age. And on that same note, our oldest student, I believe, was 96. And so, yeah, we run a free senior writers group out of the Senior Citizen Center, which we've been doing now for, gosh, 15 years maybe. And Sarah Combs leads that as well.
Yeah. Wow. 96.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible. So like if he forgets his homework, like it's going to be okay. Props. 96. You're going to forget some things at 96 probably.
Yeah. But the thing is, if you're working at 96 and you're writing, like you're sharp. Like,
oh yeah. You're on
what,
it.
That's what keeps us young.
Oh, you definitely.
Know,
is
continuing to work and learn and read and write. So that idea of lifelong learning, that learning is a continuum, that it never starts, is really the fire, you know, behind the Carnegie Center's light.
I love that.
Yeah.
So the new Carnegie Center catalog just came out.
Yes.
Just dropped this week. I got my copy.
I know. It's hot off the presses.
There's a lot of classes
or
going
off
on.
The press. I always forget which one it is. Is it plural or singular?
Well, I guess it's both.
Yeah.
Prepositions. You know, there should be a class to explain.
Yes. Yeah. Well, working at a literary center, it's you're constantly scrutinizing everything you say and write, which I mess up weekly.
Oh, but yeah. We're only human. That's
yeah.
Okay. So there's a few things. The first, I mean, there are some upcoming events at the Carnegie Center that I mean, the Carnegie Center always has so many things going on. But one thing I want to talk about is the Kentucky Women's Writers Conference.
Yes.
Which is basically happening September 15th and 16th, and is always a fantastic thing to just be a part of and be able to go to the public sessions and see, you know, the Wild Women of Poetry, Gypsy Slam, which became a different name later on.
Yeah, Wild Women.
Wild Women, yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's an amazing part of it. So can you talk just a little bit about the kind of how the Carnegie Center plays into the Kentucky Women's Writers Conference?
Yeah, so Kentucky Women Writers Conference, I think a lot of folks know, is the longest running women's conference devoted to women writers of its kind in the country, which is pretty incredible. And I can't remember the exact date, but it used to be funded in full through the University of Kentucky.
I think this is the 39th annual.
Oh, 39th annual. Thank you.
No problem.
And there was some point in there in the 39 years that UK and the Women Writers Conference lost its funding. And so the conference was going to fold and it wasn't going to happen anymore. And Jan Eisenhower, the former director of the Carnegie Center, stepped in and said, you can have it here. This is where it needs to be. Funding has gone back to, you know, from university now, and so they do have money coming in from them, but they decided that the Carnegie Center is where they would stay.
Great.
And so it's a wonderful conference. For those who haven't been, I just encourage everybody to get a ticket or to do one of the free readings or free satellite kind of workshops that's happening. It's really, it's just a moving, inspiring, collaborative environment in this, you know, in the same spirit of the Carnegie Center.
Definitely. And this year there's a really interesting, there's a special reading by the Carnegie's Young Women Writers that'll be happening on that Saturday, September 16th from at 3:15. And that's open and to the public and totally free. And
yes. And our Young Women Writers, this group of women are part of the Young Women Writers Writing Project, mm-hmm. which is funded through Kentucky Foundation for Women. They have really close one-on-one and small workshops throughout the whole year with some of Kentucky's best writers. I think this year was Nicole Brown and Bianca Spriggs, and it's always just, you know, a great group. Well, anyway, these women come together in the end, and they do a public reading, and all their work is actually published, excerpts from their work. Oh, wow. Or short poems, depending on their genre that they're focusing on, but it's really cool.
That's cool. Where are they published at?
There's a little press that we put out at the Carnegie Center.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. So yes, I definitely, Women Writers Conference is awesome.
Yeah. And another event that's coming up that caught my attention is called Novel-T, but it's Novel-T.
So clever.
So clever. Those literary types. Bunch of word nerds.
Yeah.
So this year, George Ella Lyon, our former poet laureate, is going to be the featured
yes.
featured poet there, yeah. and that's on October 21st.
Mm-hmm. And this event's kind of taken, you know, several different faces over the year. It used to be called the Literary Tea, and at the time, Carnegie staff all came together, and everybody would make, you know, a particular dish. So it was like a Carnegie Center staff potluck.
Cool.
We'd all bring in our dishes. It was a lot of work.
I believe it.
Yeah. So we've kind of switched from that novelty. The first one in this particular structure was just last season, and we featured Allison Attlee. So this is the second one. It's a $5 event. You know, it's an opportunity to hear from our former poet laureate.
Yeah, George Ella Lyon, who's incredible.
Oh, she's the best.
Amazing singer-songwriter.
Yes, yeah. The list goes on and on with George Ella. So it's a great opportunity to be with her in a close, intimate environment.
And to drink tea.
Yeah,
who doesn't love tea? You know, what's your favorite tea, Jess? Do you have a favorite?
I'm actually not much of a tea drinker. Mm. I'm a coffee drinker, about 10 cups a day. It's something I've tried to work on, you know, the last 15 years of my life curbing, but I've failed miserably.
Yeah. But you know, do what you gotta do.
When I was pregnant, I drank a little less coffee, but more than I probably should have.
You know, I tried to quit drinking coffee by drinking yerba mate tea.
Oh yeah.
Which is a little less of like a, when you drink coffee, you kind of spike in energy and then crash hard.
Yeah.
Yerba mate is a little more gradual about it, which helped. But then I moved to Japan and coffee every day.
Yeah. You see, this is my.
I do. That's a serious coffee mug. I know no one can see it, but it's like the big Bubba cup that you get at the Speedway, the 72-ouncer.
I do not mess around with coffee. So I'm not a huge tea drinker, but I think the fragrant, you know, I love to smell it. Mm. And I love loose tea. I think it's just beautiful, but yeah, not much of a drinker.
Yeah,
myself.
That's okay.
Bourbon and coffee.
You're there for the novel, less for the tea.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And you know, there's also another event that happens at the Carnegie Center, the International Eating and Reading Night, yes. which is one of my favorite events.
It's one of my favorite events too.
And basically, it's, you know, it's kind of just a kind of a potluck dinner, and then an open mic, and then there are a few featured readers, and it's totally free, no registration required. Mm-mm. And it's on October 10th this year. But yeah, you can just show up, bring an ethnic dish if you want to share, and all kinds of different things. What are some dishes and some countries represented that you've seen?
Gosh, we have had, well, for folks who don't know, the Carnegie Center is home to what most people refer to as Operation Read. That's not really the proper title. It's BCTC, English as a Second Language, mm-hmm. but they operate in our building, and they have for many years. And there's over 200 immigrants wow. and refugees who are learning English there during the typical school year every day. I mean, it's the amount of language and culture and life that comes into the Carnegie is just, it's really hard to measure by any kind of scale, you know, in words or otherwise. But so we typically have over 30 countries represented, and that's just like it's kind of like an arbitrary number I'm throwing out there. I just remember going through last year and counting 30, but not necessarily from the same countries. It's open. It's not, it's only structured in that there's, we typically feature like 5 to 6 readers. Mm-hmm. We started doing that just to make sure there was enough content. But what happens is, as you know, with a lot of open mics is, you know, the courage builds. Mm-hmm. Like you hear one person tell their story and then you hear a second and then it fills you with courage that you didn't have leading up to share your words. And you realize your voice is safe,
yeah.
You know, after you've heard some. There was one particular story last year that I'll never forget, and it was a young man who was in Ukraine when Russia invaded it, and his family fled, and they fled to Germany, and they lived in Germany for several months, and he so I don't know his full backstory, but he spoke Yiddish,
mm-hmm.
he spoke wow. Russian, is that right? And then he spoke, he would later learn German and English when he was in this refugee camp in Germany. So he was in Germany, and the humanitarian workers and just the people who would stay with him and his family at the camp would sing everybody a lullaby at night. And so he sang this lullaby in German, and his family would eventually make it to the States, which was their goal. And he had been living in California, and he said the phrase "sea to shining sea." I'd never really thought about it before, but in the United States, you can really drive from sea to shining sea.
Yeah.
And he said, when I realized you could do that, I said, I'm doing it. I'm going to drive from California, where he was, mm-hmm. to the East Coast. And so on his drive, he thinks that Facebook event mm-hmm. app,
yeah.
he was driving. Hopefully he stopped at some point and pulled up the phone. But he had Googled events, uh-huh. And he had typed in the word culture mm-hmm. events or cultural or something. And the Carnegie Center's International Eating and Reading Night popped up.
Wow.
So this young man was on his way, a Ukrainian refugee who had been in Germany, who was now living in the United States, who was driving from sea to shining sea, had somehow found out that the Carnegie Center was hosting this International Eating and Reading Night, and he came and he shared a story with us, and it was just beautiful and touching.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, and those are the folks that come to International Eating and Reading Night. It's just, it's a wonderful event. If you're tenderhearted in any way, you mm-hmm. will cry. I always cry at this event, just because the people's stories are so powerful. You know, how we get where we are, like how we move, like how we navigate in this world is it's just remarkable.
It is, and you know, for folks who want to check that out, that's October 10th, 10:10, mm-hmm. At the Carnegie Center at 6 p.m.
And bring a dish. The Carnegie Center normally reaches out to Savs, and we normally get some West African cuisine.
Some peanut goat.
Yes.
Fufu.
Well, we should stay away from peanut because of all the allergies.
Oh, yeah. I understand. I understand.
But that's one of my favorites. But we normally get a few like larger dishes just to supplement, but food is never an issue. People get so excited to cook from something that they know well, you know, or something that reminds them of their family. And, you know, and ethnic dishes can be regional. You know, mm-hmm. it's like dialect. You
yeah.
know, if there's food that's from Eastern Kentucky, or if you grew up on fried chicken and mashed potatoes, you know, that's
it's
your...
It's ethnic.
It's ethnic. That's mm-hmm. your food. So don't be intimidated by that word.
Mm-hmm.
If I would just encourage people to bring or make their favorite dish.
Mm, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, Jess, let's take a quick break.
Okay.
The STEAM Academy is about to have a fire drill, so we might just have
goodness.
A little music play for a bit. But yeah, we'll be back with you as soon as we can.
Okay.
But nonetheless, we're here with Jess Moeller, and you're listening to Bluegrass Bios.
Columbia Gas reminds you to smell and tell. Indoors or out, if you smell something like rotten eggs, it could be natural gas. So if you smell and tell, call 911 to report a possible leak.
Will you be needing a haircut soon? Anyone can go to Brenda's Aesthetica on 1533 Eastland Parkway, number 11. This is a unisex, family-friendly establishment that does haircuts, perms, colors, extensions, and more. You can learn more about Brenda's Aesthetica by visiting their Facebook page, Brenda's Aesthetica Unisex, or by calling 859-757-1355. Again, that's Brenda's Aesthetica on 1533 Eastland Parkway, number 11, at 859-757-1355. Lexington Community Radio, thanks Brenda's Aesthetica for supporting True Community Radio.
Studies show that when car seats are used correctly, they can reduce infant and toddler injury and death by up to 70%. But those same studies indicate that nearly 80% of car seats are installed incorrectly. We all want the absolute best for our children, but in the hustle and bustle of everyday life, it can be hard to find the time to learn everything we need to know about our child's car seat. Let the Lexington Fire Department take the guesswork out of it for you. If you have a child that uses a car seat, schedule an appointment with the Lexington Fire Department for a 15-minute class on how to install the car seat.
For more information on the free 15-minute class on how to install your car seat, call 859-455-SEAT. That's 859-455-7328 to schedule your free appointment.
Before you ride, do your ABC quick check. Make sure you have enough air in your tires, brakes are working, chain is running smoothly, and quick release levers are closed. Also, remember that bike maintenance is important and having required lights and visible clothing at night is vital to riding safely. This message is brought to you in partnership by Lexington Community Radio and Bluegrass Cycling Club.
Getting tested for HIV is easier than ever these days. Even so, 1 in 4 people with HIV in the U.S. doesn't know they have it. All adults should be tested at least once in their lives. If you have multiple sex partners, get tested on a regular basis. The earlier HIV is diagnosed, the easier it is to treat. Talk to your doctor, make an appointment at Planned Parenthood on PlannedParenthood.org, or get free testing at the Lexington Health Department by calling 859-288-2437.
Want to apply for a family member to immigrate to the U.S.? The Maxwell Street Legal Clinic is having free information sessions. An experienced attorney or representative will give you an overview of the family immigration process and answer general questions. Anyone is welcome to attend. Sessions are the first Wednesday of each month at 6 p.m. That's August 3rd, September 7th, October 5th, November 2nd, and December 7th. There will also be sessions the third Wednesday of each month at 10 a.m. August 17th, September 21st, October 19th, November 16th, and December 21st. You can call to register at 859-233-3840. Maxwell Street Legal Clinic is at 201 East Maxwell Street, Lexington, Kentucky. These presentations are made possible due to the generous support of the Kentucky Bar Foundation.
Hi, this is Luke Cage. No, I'm kidding. This is Frank X. Walker from the Appalachian Poets, and you're listening to WLXU 93.9 LPFM, Lexington Community Radio.
1960 Hey, the Motor City burning. We'll be right back.
I'm gonna praise him, praise him till I'm gone.
Hey everybody, we're back. You're listening to WLXU 93.9 LPFM, Lexington Community Radio. My name is Chuck, and with me in the studio is Jess Moeller. Hi, Jess.
Hi, Chuck.
So we're talking about Jess's life. And Jess's role at the Carnegie Center. You're the director of marketing and events, correct?
Marketing communications. But I do manage all the majority of the events.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great. And so, you know, we were just recently talking about the International Reading Night. And I think it's fascinating that exists because Lexington is such a worldly city.
It really is.
And it's really interesting to hear about you working at the Embassy of Croatia because... You know, I think here in Lexington, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but with the horse industry here and with UK and Transy and especially the Patterson School of Diplomacy at UK mm-hmm. and all that they do, really training diplomats, you know, we're very connected. Not only are we in the epicenter of America, but also, you know, North America.
Absolutely. Yeah, Lexington, I think, is way more culturally aware and elevated than I think I had ever expected when mm-hmm. I moved here.
Yeah.
It's a great just blend and mix of people.
Mm-hmm. And so we're also checking out the new fall catalog for 2017 that the Carnegie Center just dropped. And all kinds of great events in there. It's hot. Hot off the presses. The ink's still wet.
Yes. And it's all online.
It is, yeah. So you can go to carnegiecenter.org.
CarnegieCenterLex.org.
CarnegieCenterLex.
So there's a bunch of Carnegie Centers in this country, which makes marketing and branding a little difficult. Mm-hmm. So we had to throw Lex in there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
There's actually two other Carnegie Centers in Kentucky.
Wow. Where are the other ones?
One is in Northern Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is... now I'm drawing a blank. Outside of Elizabethtown, I think.
E-Town.
Yeah, and then there's a Carnegie Center right across the river in Louisville, in Indiana.
Nice. In New Albany.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep.
Wow. They're out there. Thanks, they're Andrew. Thanks, Andrew Carnegie.
Yeah. Glad you saved your legacy at the end there.
Yeah, just right at the photo finish. Anyway, that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
So, you know, another part of the Carnegie Center that I love is the Kentucky Great Writers Series.
Yes.
And so periodically throughout the year, there'll be it's usually three writers mm-hmm. kind of paired together from the state. To just kind of from different varieties of writing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so the Kentucky Great Writers is a quarterly, so we do it seasonally. Mm-hmm. We have a reading that showcases three Kentucky authors. Those authors don't necessarily have to be living in Kentucky anymore. Mm-hmm. A lot of our authors, you know, it's a transient lifestyle, mm-hmm. Especially if you're going through academia. So, mm-hmm. The idea of the Kentucky Great Writers is that you were born in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Different from the Kentucky Writers Hall of Fame, where you can be inducted into the Writers Hall of Fame if you weren't born in the state. Mm-hmm. And I should say, Kentucky Great Writers, if you're born or currently mm-hmm. living, residing.
Yeah, you're currently a great writer.
You're currently a great writer in Kentucky.
Yeah, you might be so great you end up in the Hall of Fame.
Yes,
yeah.
That's true.
It's like a living Hall of Fame.
It is.
In a way.
Yeah, it's definitely a good... what's the word I'm looking for? Not polls, but it definitely feeds into the Hall of Fame for sure.
I see. Yeah, and so there are a few scheduled. There's one scheduled for the remainder of 2017 with Christopher Rowe, Richard Underwood, and Amelia Martins on October 3rd.
Yeah, so we encourage everyone to come to that. Those three authors will begin reading at 6:30, but we do an open mic at 6, mm-hmm. and it's first come, first served. So it's a really cool opportunity to share the stage with published authors and a chance to share your work with the crowd who's there to see a published author. It kind of changes the dynamic a little bit. And we always have coffee from Nate's Coffee, and we do sweets and mm-hmm. nibbles by the bite. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a great event.
And the open mic starts at 6, so get your stanzas ready.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Maddox is our development director, but everyone at the Carnegie Center wears many hats. And Kentucky Great Writers is her event. She emcees that.
Mm-hmm. And what a great way to showcase. And they're free and open to the public as well.
Yes, it is free.
So another thing that the Carnegie Center does, and there's so many things, so I'm only hitting on like maybe 10% of them.
There's over 130 classes, workshops, events, literary happenings in the fall catalog. So
it's pretty incredible, and you can check it all out at CarnegieCenterLex.org. The Author Academy at the Carnegie Center, I think, is something that's really interesting. You know, it's basically 75 hours of kind of coaching a writer all the way through the process of drafting, all the way through how to publish your book?
Yeah, so it's about to enter its third year, and the Author Academy was really created with our writers in mind who didn't have the money or maybe the time to do a MFA, to do a creative writing program, but you still have this individualized kind of like a low residency, very custom, very tailored, in addition to being matched with a writing mentor who works with you throughout the whole year. If you become an Author Academy student, you also get to attend all the Carnegie Center workshops, Books in Progress Conference, all of our events for free. It's a part of the Author Academy stipend. And it's just a chance for people who I kind of look at this also as one that kind of leads into the MFA. If you're not quite sure if that's where you want to go or what your work looks like, if you could get into an MFA program, this Author Academy really helps shapes and conditions the writers and gives them a taste of how much work it is. I mean, there's an incredible amount of commitment that goes into being a full-time writer. So the Author Academy really keeps you on task as you're writing throughout the year. And hopefully in the end, you're coming away with the manuscript.
Yeah, and I think the Carnegie Center is a resource for every level of folks to develop their writing skills is pretty remarkable. And I know in the intro to this catalog too, Neil had written a little bit about a gentleman who didn't know how to read. He was illiterate.
Yeah.
But Neil had coached him and helped out. His mother had helped him to write as well. And, you know, he had a personal goal of writing a book, even though he was illiterate. And, you know, with the help of the Carnegie Center and Neil and his mother, was able to do that.
Yeah, it's really, Carnegie Center's it's a state treasure. You know, it's a national treasure. I mean, it's just it's a great place. And it's important to emphasize the many different stages of learning there. And this idea that we complete the cycle of literacy, which is something that's really not being mirrored anywhere else. So you see a lot of organizations who focus on reading and writing at the most basic level, so reading and writing as a necessity. And then you have the organizations that are working on writing as a craft, you know, writing as an art form. But at the Carnegie Center, you have both. And so, you know, the peak of literacy is when you take a necessity like writing or reading and you turn it into an art form. And so our students who are learning to read and write just to make it through life are seeing these acclaimed authors and writers published and host readings and be New York Times bestselling authors. It's all happening in the Carnegie Center. So it's this really cool cycle that you just... And this is not hyperbole. You really don't see it.
Yeah.
It's truly unique.
It's a rarity.
Yeah.
Definitely. And, you know, and some of the other classes that the Carnegie Center offers, there's fiction classes. You can learn how to write kids' books, which I think is awesome. There's a sci-fi and fantasy writing group. You know, there's a poetry class. This fall about writing poetry through automatic writing, which is something I personally really enjoy a lot.
Yeah.
And there's also an overnight write-in that Jude McPherson, celebrated poet and LCR DJ.
Yes. And Jude also works with us at the Carnegie Center. So he's hosting. We've done the overnight write-in. This will be our second year at the Carnegie Center. In previous years, we also held the event at Joseph Beth. And it's just this, you know, it's a lock-in. And you just, we provide food and drinks and... we offer you the space to share it with other writers, and we typically do it. I hope I'm not making this up, but I feel like it's during NaNoWriMo.
It is indeed. Yeah. It is. It's NaNoWriMo, which if you're not in the NaNoWriMo, is the National Novel Writing Month.
So you are, you know, essentially get 24 hours to really reach your NaNoWriMo goal.
So if you want to write that book,
yes,
lock yourself in. That's the way to do it. Jude will help you. There's also a nonfiction writing group that Neil puts together that's meeting starting September 5th, which is awesome. There's also a lot of revision and like basics of proofreading classes, which I think are really interesting if you have some grammatical errors and you want to get better.
Well, and you just realize, you know, we always are saying it's revision, revision, revision. Like you are revising and drafting and working and reworking, I mean, for years. Sometimes that's how long it takes. So this idea that, you know, revising and staying on top of your grammar, it's not exploiting a negative. It's not a bad thing. Like it's something that we constantly have to be learning and staying abreast on.
That's true.
And so those classes we have really just started introducing a couple years ago, and we realized how needed they were, even for the most experienced writer, because of the emphasis on revision and how important it is to fine-tune your craft. So, yeah, those classes are great.
Yeah, I think so, and especially in, you know, a social media tech-based world where we're abbreviating everything.
Yeah.
That's important to stay sharp.
Yes.
Keep your pen as sharp as your mind.
Yeah, you can't really abbreviate when you're sending your manuscript to an agent, so.
yeah, exactly. J.K. Rowling.
At least not yet.
Dumbledore J.K. anyway, so so there's some other classes too. There's there are a lot of free classes that I want to talk to people about. There's a free writing practice course that meets on Fridays from noon to 1:30, starting September 15th. That's basically just an opportunity that, you know, to workshop your writing without any judgment, which I think is awesome and is open to all levels. Mm-hmm. There's also a seniors writing group that meets on Fridays from 10 to 11:30, starting September 15th at the Lexington Senior Center, and that's free to everybody. So if any seniors out there, you know, getting wild on a Friday,
that's right,
or a Saturday during the year, you know, that class has been
so popular, we've actually added a second one that's not even included in the catalog.
Wow,
yeah,
that's amazing. And so you can also, at the Carnegie Center, you know, learn how to write screenplays. You can get prep for the GRE if you're planning on getting your master's.
Chuck.
I know, what's up? There's a bookmaking 101 course, so if you want to learn how to make books, you can. There's even a growing your readership using humor in social media class, which I think is really interesting. So if you're, you know, if you think you're funny and no one else does, you might want to take that class. Chuck.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's creating this brand. Like, what's your social media identity? What's your platform, you know?
Totally. And that's great. And, you know, there's also grant workshops to learn how to write grants.
Learn how to fund those books. Mm-hmm. You're an artist and writer, and there's opportunities for funding probably out there that you don't know about.
Get those dollars.
Yep.
And also, the languages, or the world language classes, are probably one of my favorite offerings that you all have. You have French, Spanish, Italian, German, Arabic, and ESL.
Yes, right? And those French and Spanish are pretty much, you know, permanent. We always offer French, Spanish, and ESL. Arabic, Italian, Portuguese, Chinese, Japanese, you know, those kind of rotate. We really pay attention to our community. So if folks say, you know, if I get several emails in a season that's asking for Chinese, there's a good chance we're going to put Chinese in the catalog for the next season. Cool. So those may be languages that aren't as widely spoken, or we kind of introduce those intermittently. Mm-hmm. But we felt like languages really fulfill the component of empowering, you know, people's voices, which is our mission. So world languages, I think, does tie into the literary world in that way. And just a fun factoid, Bobby Ann Mason was taking French classes when she was writing The Girl in the Blue Beret, which was a Pulitzer Prize finalist. And she used her classes in French that she took at the Carnegie Center to really, which she incorporated in her book. She spent almost a year on and off in France preparing for the book, researching, studying it. And if she hadn't had that language component, the feel of that book would not have been authentic. And so language is really important for that story.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a whole other set of words to express the world in.
Yep.
It's amazing. So the last thing I want to talk about, Jess, are the after-school tutoring programs that Carnegie does, because I think, you know, all these classes are great if you want to learn these practical skills, but as far as uplifting our community and helping out kids who really need that help, I think the Carnegie Center is, you know, top of the food chain as far as helping them out here. And it's mostly volunteer run, correct?
Yes, and so I implore anybody out there who's looking for a meaningful service to their community to reach out to the Carnegie Center. The tutoring program is a one-on-one mentorship. It's once a week. It's broken down into two sessions. So we have the school year, the calendar year, and then we have the summer session. And we have over 230 students. We are in three Title I schools, so there's also the opportunity to go to the schools. We offer that service for our folks and friends who have transportation issues. So we provide that service because, you know, getting to and from the Carnegie Center with both parents that work, which is, you know, pretty much the normal today, it is really difficult. So we try to make it as accessible and as easy for our parents as we can. And we match the tutor up with the student that have similar, where there's like some parallels. So if the student's struggling with math and you are just like, you know, you just like rock at math.
Don't look at me.
Me neither. We try to encourage, you know, we try to pair the talents with the need. And also that's true with age. So if you have a, if you feel like really great and confident about working with an 8-year-old, but 14-year-olds scare you, you know, we try to match you up with a similar age and similar course of study that you're comfortable teaching. And it's an hour commitment. So it's a, it's an important one. But what we've seen with our families, and I'm a testament to this because I tutored the same young boy for 7 years, is you really become a part of a child's life and you become part of the family. I was going to birthday parties and his older brother's trumpet concert and football games. And you spend an hour a week with a person and you really just develop a friendship. And that's so important that that these children are having adult relationship or having relationships with adults outside of their family that they can trust, that they can believe in, that they can find inspiration in. And something that's really missing. So we're not just like mentoring in an academic way. We're also mentoring in just a life fulfillment and relationship building way.
For sure. And Jess, it certainly seems like, you know, from your work in the embassy of Croatia all the way to the Carnegie Center, it seems like you've been leaving a majorly positive impact on people's lives and helping to speak for those who are too afraid to speak for themselves and, you know, help uplift. So we're very happy to have you on the show joining us to have the help and, you know, have these conversations and bring your knowledge as well.
Yeah.
So thanks for everything that you do and for helping out the kiddos. And, you know, for anybody out there, CarnegieCenterLex.org, you can't do anything better than help a kid in need.
That's right. So we're always looking for tutors and we're and volunteers for events and we're recruiting right now. So it's a great time to call.
Yeah. Contribute to the future. Future. Well, anyway, Jess, thank you so much for coming in and hanging out. It's been great to chat with you.
Yeah. Thank you, Chuck. And thanks for all the good work y'all are doing at Lexington Community Radio.
Well, thank you. And so we're going to take a quick break, but up next we'll be talking with Chow Ma, who's a Chinese-born artist living here in Lexington, who does these amazing kind of photorealistic landscape portraits of Kentucky and different areas of the world. So we'll talk more with him in a little bit, but nonetheless, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU, and we'll be back here in a bit.